it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
Let me introduce your hosts.
Some things need discussing. Don't mistake being a sap for just being a realist.
No man has played for England more times than Ben Youngs.
If you're having mince / bolognese before the game, you don't want to splash it on your nice, clean white top.
Oh, Dan Cole. With his 100 caps, all his medals, his cuddly cute face and his beautifully shiny head.
For the love of rugby.
Enjoy.
And Ollie Chesm is here. Hello, Ches.
Hello, Len.
Oh, hello, Ollie.
Hello, Coley. How are you, mate?
Very well, thanks, Ches. What brings you here, mate?
Huh?
What do you want to sell?
Not a lot, mate. I had something to sell 40 minutes ago, but it's since rotted away. Len took his time getting here, so I've got nothing left for you.
The truth is that Ches has been... He can't look me in the eye all week because I didn't pick him for my Six Nations team in the tournament. He's begging me to have a platform to explain to all the listeners that actually he's really, really good. He's brilliant at lineouts, and you know, it isn't just George Martin that tackles hard. He tackles hard as well.
I'm here to prove myself, mate. I'm not going to live that one down.
But seriously, you've obviously just played Six Nations. Len wasn't there. Lenny wants to know where you sit on the bus, mate.
Yeah, I do.
You got 23 caps, so you're kind of in that squad. You must be 23. You must be like middle tier now.
First week, I was in the top 16 by the skin of my teeth because me and Fred got an up-down at Penny Hill. I thought I'd cracked it, mate. I was top deck, ensuite bathroom, Freddie downstairs. And then the next week, Dickie and Chief came back and kicked us straight back out. So we were back to side by sides. But
you got to live the high life for like a week and just know what it's like.
Yeah, but I got a taste of it, mate. And now I want it back. And it was rough, mate. It felt like we were sleeping homeless the next 2 nights, which sounds ridiculous when you're in a five-star hotel like Penny Hill. But nah, middle of the bus, mate. I like to get midway by a wheel arch if there's a bit more leg room. So you know, some of the seats, they're either by a wheel arch, or, you know, if you go up the stairs on the left where there's normally like a little divider, they've normally got longer leg room, so I like to try and sneak myself in there if I can.
Coley, how can you remember where you started bus-wise? Because obviously you're at the back now.
It's only recently I've taken to the back. I used to not mind sitting right behind the coaches and stuff, like probably about 4, 5, 6 rows back, because A, you weren't going to get peppered from the back. If you're kind of in front of the toilet, then you're normally immune from like abuse from the back seat, and then you kind of sit behind the staff, yeah, where it's safe. And then over time, I've obviously moved back. As you get more, you kind of like, as you get older, you kind of have to sit at the back, because otherwise you end up with young guys at the back of the bus, and it's like, it's a rite of passage, you have to go to the back. Do you remember that fight we had in Treviso? Was it Treviso? Verona?
Yeah.
I missed that.
Were you rehabbing, were you, in the World Cup camp?
I was rehabbing at the Lensbury, mate, yeah.
Oh, it was possibly the sweatiest bus, honestly. Have we told this story?
No, though? We've not.
It was genius, though, because we were basically on the back of the bus. I think there's like me, Courtney, Marla in front of us. I think you were in front, weren't you?
Yeah, there was
like, there were senior guys at the back.
Okay.
And then there was like JVP randomly.
So JVP is Jack Van Portfleet.
But basically we had Manu down the corridor. So Manu was basically stopping everyone coming down. And he was like basically choking blokes out. He'd be like, oh, come on, mate, you can fight back. They're like, I am. He's like, no, properly, come on, fight back properly. It's like, No, I'm not going to do that, mate. All right, you've beaten me. But anyway, there was one where I think it was Lewis Ludlum.
Yes.
I can't remember if he got naked. Basically, I think he'd been fighting really hard and he was sweating so bad. And basically, his lads had like wedged him and like almost like stripped him naked. Anyway, he then tried to like jump over the top. And as he's jumped over the top, someone's pushed him. And basically, JVP sat in his seat, like, well happy as punch, watching this fight go on. Ludz gets pushed, and Ludz's ass goes straight over JVP's nose. And he's just, JVP's getting, like, crushed under Ludz. Oh, he was literally in front of you, Lenny, wasn't he? And it was like...
I couldn't breathe. He's literally his ass crack, or his whole ass basically slotted into JVP's nose like a game of Tetris, like perfect slot. And he was still wrestling and grappling, and JVP literally didn't come up for air for about 3 minutes later. And he stung. Oh, so good.
Will Stewart decided, he was sat like a couple in front, he decided that he'd go over the seats, so he's like, I don't know, instead of going down the aisle, what is, I'll jump over the seats. And as he's basically going over JVP, isn't he, I think Courtney's then, or someone's like grabbed him and like pulled him down, so then JVP's got a face full of Will Stewart's crotch, and literally Will Stewart's being like pulled down the back of the seat, so he's hanging over the seat, he's like can't move. Me and Len could not breathe for about half hour on this bus.
I can't breathe now even thinking about it.
Oh mate, we would honestly, me and Len would die. We couldn't do any fighting because we would just die. You know when you're like crying so hard, like I can't breathe, we would just,
it's like Rikishi, wasn't it? It's literally like Rikishi.
Oh mate, yeah, the stink face, whatever they call it. Oh mate, it was,
oh god. Right, let's move on, because if not, I just will not bring it back. Mate, you made your debut 3 years ago now in Italy.
Is it 3 or is it 2?
You tell me.
It's 2, isn't it?
Is it 2 years ago? Was it two years ago?
It's 2, yeah. It's 2.
Well, how does that work if he's played 3 Six Nations, sir?
Well, because...
That's confused, Len. Len's mind is blown by that.
How does that work?
Because he did...
I did that Six Nations, then the next year.
2022, 2023, 2024, but 22 to 23 is one season, 23 to 24 is two seasons, so...
That has absolutely blown my mind.
It might be 2 years and 2 months ago, Len, that he made his debut, yeah. But yeah, it's 2 years ago.
I can't get my head around that.
If this is on social media, you need all like the, you know, that thing where he looks into the distance and all those numbers and dots and dashes comes past.
But Big Red, you, that night, what song did you sing for the initiation? Can you remember?
Yeah, I sang No Woman, No Cry in a Jamaican accent. Yeah, that was my song. I got stitched up my PE teacher. So, you know, the night before you get all the clips from family and whatever you say, and like, you know, good luck, and you know, your mum strings in whoever she can find to send a video message. My PE teacher, who's like got me playing rugby, family friend, he sent in a video and he was like, oh, the lads would love to hear your rendition of No Woman, No Cry in your Jamaican accent. Obviously I'd never done that, so I spent the night before my game, first game for England, headphones on, rehearsing the lyrics, and then yeah, just gave it a shot in the changing rooms, mate. But that clip went absolutely nowhere after that. For an obvious reason.
Chase, you also being a more senior player now, you've got a special role in the team, haven't you? You got a promotion this year to
social sec. Yeah,
you're pretty much in charge of all the off-field shenanigans, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Ant and Deck, as they are known, have gone and got themselves promoted. Obviously, Jamie George is now captain, so can no longer fulfil the role. Danny Kerr has decided he don't want to do it without his right-hand man. So they, in Terminal, whatever it was, in Heathrow, they sat me and Freddie down and said, look, we need some people to take over and we want it to be you two. And then told us that Alex Mitchell and Sam Underhill would also be on the panel. But yeah, we've been promoted, mate. Dick and Dom, I think, Unders has tried to use as our tagline, but I'm not sure I feel comfortable with it, to be honest.
How much actually organisation for the social media, how much do you actually do? Because there's a couple of things to camp. There was like a talent show. You also got a famous magician came in.
I am going to take credit for that one, but it wasn't me. But I am going to take credit for Dynamo coming into camp. What else do we do? Unders organised a day of archery and clay pigeon shooting, and then forgot to tell the boys that it was like plastic arrows and laser clay, so that went down like a lead balloon. 20 of the lads signed up for it, and I think about 6 ended up going. Bill Renshaw, the security, was scooping boys up like a Sunday league football team, trying to get enough boys to get down and fill the holes in this archery thing that Unders had set up. But there's Unders, in fairness to him, Unders has been hot on it. He got some guys in to fit some boys up with some glasses. He got some lads in to come and fit the boys up with some free suits. So give Ender some credit where it's due. He has been good behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's the credit he'll get.
Yeah.
Hang on, you can't just brush over Dynamo like that. Like, was he good?
He did one to Danny Kerr, and it like genuinely blew my mind. Like, there was a load of card magic, which, don't get me wrong, was class. But he had this, like the wooden dummies, like little wooden model, human models you had in school. He had one of them, and he basically like used it like a voodoo doll. And Danny Kerr sat with his hands flat on the table, and Dynamo started like pinching the hand on the doll, and Danny would like his hand, he'd like feel it in his hand and all this, and like properly blew my mind. And at the end, he did a load of street magic, so like, a bit more one-to-one. He did a good one with you, didn't he, Coley?
Yeah, we had to pass a red ball around, and then it ended up with me, and it had my name on it.
Mysterious. But yeah, he did one with me. He got this Sharpie pen, drew a cross on my hand, wiped it off, threw it into the air, and it appeared on my other hand somehow. So blew my mind. I was one of those skeptics.
Were you in on that?
No, I was one of those skeptics that always thought everyone was in on it. Genji said the same, but he genuinely did proper weird me out.
The boys then spent the next like 3 days like, oh well, actually it's not that, because he could have done this and he could have done this. It's like, just shut up, like, you're not doing it. So yeah,
it sounds like you nailed it, Chez, to be honest with you. In terms of the social sec, sounds like you absolutely nailed it.
Good first campaign, mate. Good first campaign. Might have set the bar too high, to be honest.
And you got to do the song, haven't you? You leased the post-match song.
I'll be honest with you, mate. I don't know how I've wangled myself into that. I came up with two lines in the first verse. Unders is just too scared to sing it by himself, I think. He likes a bit of company up in the middle, so he'll come to me at the end of each week. Because you know how Johnny May used to do it then? Like, at the end of each week, there'd be a new verse added on. We've gone with that kind of theme. And Unders will just come up with me with an idea. We'll tweak it a little bit, and then we sort of run with it at the weekend. But I'll be honest with you, I've contributed about three lines to that song. But Unders just struggles with crowds, apparently, because he... I have to go up there and hold his hand.
He'd be all right with a guitar.
The new song is actually to the sound of Shotgun, then.
I expect nothing less.
That was actually for the talent show we did. It went down. It didn't go down too well because the sound system, the production behind it wasn't great, but that was the theme music for the talent show we had in camp, was the voice clip of Unders singing Shotgun by George Ezra. It's a great voice clip if anyone hasn't heard it.
Found that shotgun underneath, also feeling like someone sometimes.
Right, firstly, I'm glad that you've got the reins on the new song that Johnny May's handed over to you. Two, I'm very pleased that Underhill's helping it. Three, I'm amazed he hasn't whipped out his guitar post-test match in the change room with one leg up on the table, straddling a guitar and stringing along to it. But we've got a question from Fred Larkin. Why are you so big? I guess the question is, like, where'd you get your size from, Chez?
Both my parents at all, to be fair. Dad's 6'4", 6'5", but I reckon the height comes from mum. She's like 6'2". Like, she's got three brothers. All of them are over 6 foot. So I think that's where the height comes from. The whole family's tall. My younger brother is one of the only people on the planet that makes me look up to speak to him.
What is it like being 6'7"?
Pros and cons. Shoes is a real struggle. I'm a size 15. Genuinely reckon you could sleep in my shoes then. They were massive, weren't they? Those Air Forces you picked up this morning. Ridiculous.
I swear to God, right? Chez's earlier, and the size of these Air Forces are like, well, I put them next to Etty, didn't I? And it literally covered her whole torso. Like, they are massive. In fact, I'm going to wear them, and I'll get a snap of me wearing them, bring them in, Chez, and we'll put it up, because they are ridiculous. And I don't even know how you walk around without them being obviously massive.
Baggy jeans, mate. You can't wear skinny jeans with size 15 feet. It's like you've got cloud feet on. But yeah, shoes is a struggle, and then the obvious one's leg room, mate. Sometimes we get some nice players, don't we, when we're flying away. Other times, leg room can be hard to come by, so you have to try and get yourself on the exit aisles. But other than that, mate, it's all good.
And where does the red hair come from?
The postman. No, I don't know, because mum is not ginger, dad is not ginger, but I think my granddad was.
Right, so it's not like a line of, like, you and your cousins when you meet up, you're all like...
Redheads.
The Weasleys.
Like, thing one, thing two. No, just me and both my brothers are proper redheads.
You don't have your mum's strength, do you? And I mean that in a nice way, because we were at Twickenham, and my kids were sat behind. I think there's a bit of a ramp to get over, and my kids were behind, they were struggling to get down, and your mum literally just picked up Henry underneath his arms and just, like, lobbed him over the... Because I could see your mum, because then she's like, yeah, they're here. I'm like, okay. And she's like, lobbed him over. I was like, fucking hell.
Your family have had a few run-ins with my family recently in that department. Yes. My mum is a great flagpole for in the stands. Like, you spot her and spot my brother, it's brilliant. And for whatever reason, Coley's family always seems to end up next to my family.
Alphabetical, mate. Must be alphabetical.
Alphabetical, must be. We were in Edinburgh, Murrayfield, the other week. Coley's lads are he was Tom Walker, the song, the singer, was performing at halftime, and he's like, everyone get your phones out and get your torches out. So obviously the whole crowd have all got their torches on, and Henry Ralph Coley's kids didn't have a phone to do it, and Lewis was like, hey, here you go, have mine.
I think Belle gave hers to Henry, and then Ralph had one, so Lewis thought, oh, Ralph did the gentlemanly thing, goes, here, have mine.
Lewis has gone to pass his phone over without realising that, or forgetting that he had one of the like rotating screensavers on. So he's clicked the torch on, passed it back, and some picture of my brother's girlfriend in...
Not a lot of clothing.
Not a lot of clothes. was the screensaver. I think Ralph was just there gawping with saliva dripping from his mouth. Yeah, Lewis quickly took the phone back and had to...
No, he's looking at it. I was like, what's wrong with Ralph? Like, what are you fucking showing my kid? Like that. Ralph just staring at this scantily clad lady. He's like, you can't be showing that to 7-year-olds. Like, oh, no, it's a mistake. It's a screensaver. It's a screensaver. Just, oh. So anyway, I've had it out with your brother about this.
Chez, the Wikipedia page says that you were born to, obviously, Michelle Bailey, of Bailey's Trailer. So is your mum famous in the trailer world?
I suppose you might be able to say so. I believe your family got a couple of our trailers lying around on their yard, Len. I'm hoping they've got good reviews.
Could you confirm, Len?
Len won't be able to confirm. He doesn't know what a tractor is.
Could you draw a picture of one, Len, just to confirm you know what we're talking about, Len? Could you draw a picture just to know?
Lads, you know farming isn't necessarily my strength, right? But I know we've got Bailey's trailers, and I also know they're not laying around in the yard, chairs. They're being used, mate. The family, they're grafting.
Hard at work, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Good on them.
There's a question from Amber. Do you prefer a roast or a fry-up? I'm guessing you food-wise.
Yeah, depends when, but I would say on a whole, I prefer... Actually, I don't know, it's hard. I think I prefer a roast, to be honest. But when you are hungover, a fry-up hits the spot, doesn't it? Not a big fan of bacon, that's my reason behind that one.
Do you like mushrooms?
Also not a big fan of mushrooms, that I'd be leaving that aside. There's a lot to the fry-up that I wouldn't eat, to be honest. That's why I'm going with a roast.
This might be, actually, she might be... Again, Chez, this is... you're single, aren't you, at the minute?
I am single. We're not doing this again, though, are we?
No, we're not going to do this, but we're just going to say that you've been inundated with romantic requests, haven't you, since... Was it Danny Kerr outed you on the O2?
Yeah, on the O2 podcast. Freddie Stewart did me no favours.
So maybe Amber wants to know, from a romantic point of view. Len, what about you? What would you have? Didn't you used to eat a fry-up before you played?
Sometimes, but I was actually, for a long time, the only player at the club or any other professional that I knew that owned a deep fat fryer, because I just needed my chips done properly.
Yeah, but Len, it was like, yeah, I don't think you need that, mate. He's like, no, you just have a steak. He's like, what do you do with steak? You can't have a steak without chips. It's like, I'm sure you'd have a steak salad, Len, it'd be fine. No, you've got to have chips. It's like, okay.
What I will say, Coley, is if I had the choice, I'd go roast over fry it. But can you remember the 666 challenge? And I couldn't believe it. Cocker's basically nearly lost the plot because a certain tighthead was at the club and Cocker's caught wind that this player had entered in a cafe and been the first person ever to win the T-shirt and complete the 666 challenge, which was like 6 sausage, 6 eggs, 6 bacon, 6 fried bread, 6 toast, beans, chips.
6 hash browns. It was 6 pancakes as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't me, by the way. But also, because he won it, he was the first person to do it, got named after him. So from then on, it was the Kieran Brook 666 challenge, which Cocker's was not happy about.
Question from Lucy. We kind of answered this. Have you found a girlfriend yet? But like, I don't know about you, Coley. Chez, you won't get saying this, but I'll be willing to put Chez out for a date. Maybe get in touch on socials at Love of Rugby. He can come and meet you. You'd have to come to Leicester. Chez will go on a blind date. I think he'll do that for us, Coley, hey?
Yeah.
Promote the pod. And yeah, so get in touch.
San Carlos, is it?
I'll maybe tee you at one of the Dan Cole fan club, mate.
Yeah, great.
So that's a yes. That's a yes.
No, I'm still very much single, man. Yeah.
We'll find you a date, mate. We'll find you a date.
Cheers, mate.
There's a question from Sally, and she's, do you prefer the second row or the back row?
It's a great question, Sally. I'm going to say the second row. Played there more, and I will get way more respect from Coley for giving that answer. So I'm going to say second row. Yeah, Coley might argue that he prefers me in the back row, but
no, Chez, you've come a long way, mate. I like the way you're thinking there. If you're a second row that can play in the back row, it makes you sound like you want to scrum. Whereas like a back row, if you say back row, it's like, oh, I've got to go in the scrum in the second row. So, but to be fair, like the role of, I say, we're like in the Six Nations, say with you, Marrow and George, is kind of, they're interchangeable. Obviously, there's differences in lineouts and stuff in scrum and set piece wise, but around the field, I guess there's roles of six and second rows. They're slightly different, but they're tailored to your strengths in the fact that you're in you're naturally good in space, so you'll find yourselves in those roles, whether you play back row, second row, won't you?
Yeah, no, not a lot changes for me, mate, to be honest. Half the time, if I'm playing six anyway, like, for example, if George goes off, I finish the game in the second row anyway, so it makes no difference to me.
Coley, obviously, you rely on locks, like pushing unbelievably hard in the scrum, but Chez, like, how do you learn that art of being a second row that can scrummage as well? Because not all second rows are particularly known for maybe adding weight or giving that scrummaging. Like, who actually taught you the art of that? Because a lot of people don't think about second rows and the importance they have in scrummaging.
I suppose it makes a big difference between who you're scrummaging behind as to how you learn as well. Obviously, I've spent the majority of my career scrummaging behind Coley, Genji. I suppose it's them, really. It's, they sort of tell you what they need and what they want from you, which is normally just push as fucking hard as you can. And if you're good at it, Coley will tell you, and if you're not, he'll tell you. So I don't know where I stand at the minute, but no, I like I say, I actually do properly enjoy scrummaging. It's, once you've done it enough, it becomes quite enjoyable to a degree. I've learnt most of my scrummaging from who I've been scrummaging behind and who you're scrummaging next to. It's not necessarily the coaches that teach you how to do it. And I think it's one of those things that you do have to have a fair bit of experience to get good at. It's not one of those things that anyone's naturally good at. And I think it's not a natural thing to do, is it, really?
I think one of, like, the greatest honours or pride you can have as, like, a second row is when a prop goes, you come in behind me, in regards to, like, especially the tight head, because he gets, like, first pick. But say if you get, like, selected and, like, you're doing scrums, it's like, you know, Chez, you're behind me. That's, like, you're in there once you've been selected for that role.
I would agree. Obviously, rightly so, when someone gets a scrum pen, it's the front row that get the plaudits. But if a prop turns around and gives you a nod and you know you've done a good job, then it's a good feeling. I think you were always saying, Thomas Lavanini? It was like a train.
You're up there, Chel. They pay you juice, Chess. You know, you come a long way. And half the thing is, like, is enjoying it. And B, it's like knowing the importance of, like, it's important to your team. And again, if you give front row, push as hard as you can and give everything you got, then when it comes to lineouts and bits and bobs around uni, then front row give it your back. So it's good second row makes the front row look good. But say second rows are underappreciated when it comes to scrummaging. I'll tell you that.
I just want to jump on again, like, because I think it's really insightful for a lot of people, because they don't necessarily know that. You know, South Africa have got an unbelievable scrum, but also helps the fact they've got gigantic locks that push like hell behind it. But just a follow-up question is for you two, like, once you have scrummed, right, and then you've got to get out of that scrum and either defend or attack, but let's just say attack, for instance, and get around the corner, like, how are your legs and are you lightheaded? Like, how is your body even feeling trying to get around the corner to attack?
You leave this one, Coley. Do you want me to...
No, you know, you give your insights. It's attack, mate, so I'm standing still.
Like, I would say it makes a difference. Like I said, when you said, Len, around what's the difference between second row and six, it's like the scrum is the big difference. And I suppose the back row, traditionally, when you look at them, I probably have a lot more, like, higher running output. The scrum does take a lot out of your legs, especially if you're scrummaging for a long time. I remember Tom Harrison brought in the ISO to go drill at Leicester. It's a horrible drill, long scrums, and then we'd have to run around the corner and attack. And yeah, it does take a fair bit out of your legs. But like Coley says, if you don't bother going near the ball, then I suppose it doesn't actually matter. So,
wait, the ball is overrated in a game of rugby. The key to longevity is don't go near it and you'll be all right. Bad things happen around the ball. That's my motto.
Stay away from it.
We've got a thing on this pod about a certain legendary English back rower who now works in the management setup. Obviously, you going from the second row to the back row. Has Richard Hill shown you his career highlights yet?
Not yet. I've not been afforded that pleasure, but I think it's coming at some point.
Because you were born in 2000?
2000.
Yeah, so you know what happened in 2003. Well, I guess he's told you what happened in 2003.
Yeah, he's made it very clear what happened in 2003.
He does actually do some work with a lot of the younger guys in camp and stuff.
I did get put in touch with Hilly when I was like 20, just to ask him a few questions. It was at a time when I was at Leicester and I was sort of playing six back row for a brief period, and so I got put in touch with Hilly just to ask him a few questions and what have you. But other than that, I'd never met him prior to going into my first camp.
Did he include you in the back row skills school, or are you...
No, I don't have to worry about Jacqueline or anything like that, mate. That's not my... that's where my work in the back row stops.
Yeah, that's when you're a 5/6 rather than a 6/5.
I learned loads from Courtney
Laws.
Obviously, he's only just recently retired, and I think there's probably a fair few similarities in our game. Like, he was 6/2 row, I would say, towards the end of his career, rather than a second row /6. But a lot of similarities around the line out. But I think probably the biggest thing I took away from Courts is actually more off the field. Like, you two will know, like, how laid back a bloke he is. Like, not everything has to be full on all the time. Like, Courts' approach to his rugby, certainly from when I've known him, was really relaxed. proper legend off the field, as I'm sure you guys will agree. But I think that's probably the biggest thing for me, because I think when you're a youngster coming into an England camp, like, you think, like, everyone is, but you think everyone's watching your every move, and like, you feel like everything has to go perfectly, and you can sort of stress yourself out a little bit. But Courts was a real sort of calming figure in the squad, as well as a great leader. So I'd say that's probably the biggest thing I took away from Courts, is just how you can sort of approach your rugby off the field as well as on it.
He was as laid back as they come.
Properly laid back.
But a hell of a player. Toby Flood did an interview last week, and he called you and George Martin horrible and nasty. He said the pair of them provide the grunt and just whack people. I mean, it's a nice compliment.
I mean, Floody, you would know about enforcers.
Well, I was thinking that, Coley.
It's the only time I think having a bit of grunt and being nasty is a nice compliment to receive.
Essentially, you're saying, thanks, Floody, but if it came from Backy's Bortha, I'd be really happy, but it's fact it's come from you.
yeah, pretty much, yeah. Nice little comment, but like I say, if it came from Backy's Bortha, then it might mean a little bit more.
Still time, mate, still time.
We've got some questions on the line-out, but let's have them after the ads.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is an advert for NordVPN. I absolutely love rugby, but when I'm playing away in Europe and I can't catch up on all the action, I just don't know what to do.
There is a way to safely watch all the rugby you can ever ask for, no matter where you are, whether you're playing away in Europe with Leicester, or more likely, when you're on holiday in Dubai.
So I can watch as much rugby as possible.
A NordVPN account can be used on 6 devices and is so easy to use. You can connect with just one click. Just like you, Ben, it's also got amazing speed. It's one of the fastest VPNs out there.
That sounds awesome. So picture the scene. I've got my 6 screens set up. I'm watching the 6 different rugby matches from around the world. Heaven. But what happens after the final whistle?
Oh, Ben, it's not just for sport. You can stream all the TV shows and films you like just by switching your location.
Count me in. How can I try it?
To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/FTLOR. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
For the love of NordVPN. Right, we are back. Lineouts, Chez. Let's get into lineouts. How many calls are there? When do you learn them? Are there playbooks? Do you study them before bedtime? Steve Borthwick loves a lineout. Like, we want to know about lineouts. How do they work?
One of the parts of the game that if it didn't exist, I probably wouldn't have a job, so grateful for them. As part of Second Row Club, everyone loves a line-out Nors in session. In terms of start of the week, so let's say we played a game on Saturday. Sunday night, Second Rows will go into a meeting and we'll have been sent various bits of footage throughout the day, sort of preview the opposition. From then on, you sort of just draw up a plan of what line-outs you want to run, depending on how they defend.
But just with that meeting, is it like all sort of individual second rows coming like, oh, I've seen this and I think we can do this, and then Steve might just go, we're doing this?
Steve is really good in this area, obviously. Like, it was his thing wanting line out, so he does have a big input on it. But yeah, some of the meetings do go on for a long old while, just because obviously everyone has an idea, everyone wants to throw in their 10 pence, and we can be there for a while. But no, normally Steve's pretty good. Steve will sort of have an outline of what he wants, and then it's sort of up to the locks who are playing at the weekend to sort of tweak it to however they want to run it. Because obviously at the end of the day, it's us guys that are running it on the field. But in terms of working with coaches for line-out, Steve's the best in terms of that, just because obviously he takes such pride in his line-out work.
Yeah, well, say in terms of line-out coaches, there aren't any better. And I say when he was a player, there weren't many better operators. But I say it's just interesting to see if we have someone that smart in the room. You know, it's tough probably taking it back. Well, not tough, but you have to learn to take a backward step in regards to, like, this is what I would run, but I'm not you, so you run it. And the best line-outs are when, say, the caller goes in with ultimate confidence. It might be a simple call, but he backs it and gives you confidence, where it's better to have one really good sort of call than 10 semi-good ones, you know what I mean?
And, like, Coley be able to tell you, like, there is a lot to learn as well. Like, throughout the week, like, a lot of the unit meetings the forwards will have will generally be around the line-out, just because there's so much learning. Obviously, it changes week to week, and it's all sort of coded in a foreign language so that opposition can't sort of understand what you're trying to run.
In the majority of a test week, say, you'll have a bank of, it'll be 7-man, 6-man, 5-man, probably 4-man. So you have 4 different line-out lengths. Then each of those line-out lengths, you'd have
a different formation. It's 2 or 3 formations.
Then you can shift in between. You can shift around those formations. So we often have line-outs that shift formation. So you could say there's 4 or 5 on top of that, so that's 16. And then individual, every formation will have a set of calls and checkout calls on top of that, won't it?
And that's just your standard. So I reckon between those from 7, 6, 5, and 4, you've probably got 40 calls that you could possibly go to. And then that's without running any plays that the backs then want in point zone, that red zone area, proper nosing off it. I just sort of then smile. But do you know what I mean? Like, it does get properly complicated. And for us, second rows, it's easier. It's like Coley with a scrum. We sit in all the meetings behind the scenes, so like we've already learnt it before Coley's even had a chance to look at the sheet. So the amount of time it takes the team to then walk through that, so that then by the end of the week, the whole forward pack's on the same page with it all. It does take a lot of effort and a lot of repping.
So Chez, when you actually say you're going in with a 7-man lineup, right, and you walk in, and like you say, it changes week to week, but you go in and you've prepped as the first lineup in the game, and you get there, you're in the line, and you think, they've not D'd up how we thought they're going to do. Is that when you then shift formation so you'd all change, or is that when you rely on dummies, or do you just rely on speed? Like, what are you thinking at that point?
Yeah, so like normally, like Coley said, we'd have calls in each different formation, but you'd also have what we call like checkouts, basically. Every team runs them so that you can sort of bail out to those options if you really need to, normally right at the front or right at the back. But then, like Coley said, if you've previewed all week, you got to remember you preview their D as much as they sort of preview your attack, if you know what I mean. So even though you think this is how they defend, they might have watched your game and go, right, they run this line out, so we're going to defend slightly different. And obviously, if you come in with that and they show you a completely different picture, then that's where, like Coley said, you just shift formation and all of a sudden got a whole new set of calls that you can try and use to manipulate. But then Coley said it a minute ago, like sometimes the best lineouts are the ones where you just, regardless of what they're doing, you just have one call, everyone's on the same page, you just go in and back it and usually win the ball. So sometimes we are guilty of overcomplicating it more than it needs to. Like you also always say, Len, we do all this practice just to win the ball at the front, but sometimes that's what you got to do.
I don't mind moaning about it sometimes because I know how much effort and how much work goes in, and we get to a game and you deliver it to me right at the front of the line out, and then I've got to chuck a 20 meter pass, and often it's in the rain and it comes out like a paper bag in a hurricane. So I basically blame you lot.
Guilty.
Yeah, deny, reaccuse, Len. It's fine.
But like, I've seen lineouts change loads compared to what they used to be to what they are now. Like, Coley, you've seen it all, mate. You know, when you think of the athleticism of some of the lads now compared to maybe some of the ones that when we first started out.
Oh, yeah, mate. The springiness of the boys nowadays. So when I first started playing for Leicester, I was, 20 in the first team. And there was a veteran lineout caller / broadcaster who had his favourite lineout every Tuesday morning. He'd sort of come in, I'd be third man in the lineup, he'd come in, jump straight on top of me, and the bloke was stiff as fuck, Chess. We couldn't lift him at all, but he, straight away, instead of like, because he's 34 or whatever it was at the time, and a senior player, a World Cup winner, he'd be like to the coach, he'd be like, Coley's a little bit stiff today, aren't you? It's like, yeah, me, mate.
Did I?
Reaccused, yeah.
That's where you learnt it.
Right. We've got a question from Max, and it says, who made you the best coffee during the whole of the Six Nations?
Coley, you're a keener for a coffee and a refuel break. For some reason, you and Genji used to like making me make you a coffee, even though I'd make a flat white and look like I'd spat on the top of it, but nevertheless,
you got to learn. Well. You've got to learn.
Practice makes perfect. But Jamie George and Elliot Daly always like to argue between the two of them as to who's better out of them two. Obviously, our George, but I'd say number one has to be Manu, without a doubt. The bloke can make a swan on top of your coffee. I think he hands down wins it. A few of the younger lads are actually pretty handy with it as well. Tommy Freeman, he's one to watch for the future, but I think Manu takes the title.
Manu's the goat when it comes to coffee and flat whites. For, I reckon, 10 years now, he's been the best. But I will give credit to 4D.
Where 4D is great is the actual running of the machine. He makes sure that it's, you know, in pristine condition all the time, but two, he actually knows how they work.
And the great thing about George as well is he'd be like, fucking hell, who's fucking left this like this? And he'd like secretly love cleaning it, wouldn't he? He'd make like this big like deal about, guys, filthy, this. And they're like, he'd love just cleaning. Like, if it was already clean, he'd be upset inside. But because it's dirty and like someone's left it in a bad state, he just loved cleaning it up.
Kohler, you know why he made everyone coffees? Because obviously he listens to the pod, we know he does, and we called him out for basically making it for the people he wanted to, and then he used to just scamper away, me, got to get ready for game. But it seems like he's listened, he's heard what we've had to say, and he's changed, so good for him. Well done, 40.
Good on you, 40.
Right, next question we have is from Angus Flint. How long would you last against Dan Cole in the octagon?
It's a great question. The Kohler Bear is aptly named the Kohler Bear because of his ridiculous... It is man strength.
Dad strength. No, good dad strength.
I don't know. It'd be a sporting spectacle. I'm in no way going to try and claim I win it.
By not instantly saying that I would win means you are backing yourself to win, by the way. That's how I've interpreted this. And that's fine because you're...
I don't know. I reckon I'd just...
Oh, no.
Jog around for the full 5 rounds, Coley. I might try and weigh you down, but absolutely no chance am I trying to wrestle Coley. I might just have to put the reach to use. I can't let you get close, otherwise I'm knackered, mate.
You got the length, so I'd have to ground and pound and try and headbutt you or something.
Yeah, as soon as it gets to a wrestler, it's game over for me.
Speaking of fighting, got a question here from Ed. Who would win in a fight, the Youngs brothers or the Chesham brothers?
I reckon Tom Youngs would beat the Chesham brothers on his own, mate. Sorry, Len.
No, you're fine, because I was going to say the only way that the Youngs brothers is winning is if Tom knocks them both out. That's the only hope, because if I've got to be involved, there's no chance, mate.
But trying to watch Tom reach your brother's face with a punch would be quite fun.
I don't think Tom's going in for a punch straight off the bat, mate.
He's chop tackling you first, probably. He's chop tackling you first.
Biting your ankles. Like, he's doing whatever. What was it when Genji was telling me about his first day at Leicester in the scrum, and he was being a bit of a prick to, I don't know who scrum was, it might have been, he said like Greg Bayman or someone, didn't he? Tom was watching from the sideline and was like, I'm not fucking having this. So he comes steaming on and just fucking starts ploughing into Genji. And Genji looked up and Len, from wherever you've come from, it's just Steve said you were just steaming into him from the side as well.
I managed to throw about 20 uppercuts in about 0.5 seconds and land none of them. But I was full of intent, bags of endeavour, but I'm like, you know, like Scrappy Doo. Get him, Scoob.
Well, as I said before you came on, one of my kids has punched her tonight at Beavers. I basically had to explain to him the rules of, like, you know, you don't punch anyone. If it happens, you have to walk away, then say stop, then tell a teacher, you know, stop again. And he's like, what happens if you do all that? It's like, and he keeps going, it's like, oh, fuck him, just punch him. He's like, if no one else is going to stand up for you, you've got to stand up for yourself at some point. So, but fighting, we don't condone it, but it's useful in sometimes.
Right, to finish, Chez, and we asked Genji this, our first pod guest, and you are our second. First rugby player you fell in love with. Now, don't be embarrassed. Don't feel shy.
I would say one player that sticks out, mate, just because I remember watching him when I'd have been like 8 or 9, and like more just because of how he looked and how he played to fair, was Sebastian Chabal, mate. He was the scariest bloke I've ever seen on TV. That was my first.
What do you love about rugby that no one else does?
Do I love about rugby that no one else does? I think we hit the nail on the head earlier, mate. Lineouts. No one cares about lineouts, but if it wasn't for lineouts, I wouldn't have a job. So I owe it all to lineouts.
Which away ground do you love the most?
Stade de France. I know we played in Lyon as well at the weekend, but when you play away against France, they know how to do it properly over there. And obviously, I think you touched on it in one of your other pods of the week, Coley, like their anthem's pretty mega as well. So I'd say anywhere away in France is usually a good away day.
Yeah, mate. Lyon, though, was pumping.
Bouncing, wasn't it?
Like, as I said, France is brilliant, but I say Lyon put on a show.
Don't know what it is as well. Like, when we're over here, like, when you're warming up, there's no one ever in the stadium. You're like, you're warming up in front of about 10 people. When you go over there, the stadium's already bouncing in the warm-up. You can't even hear yourself think different gravy.
Which law would you love to change?
I think whoever scores the try should have to convert it. See Coley try and knob one over from the touchline would be... obviously, you'd have to score one first, Coley.
Correct. So I'm all for this rule, mate, because it's not going to affect me at all, is it?
Do you know what I mean? But I think it'd be... it'd add a bit of something to the game if, you know, a hooker or a tired every now and then had to try and knob one over from the touchline.
How good would that be? Can you imagine engagement on that? Like, Coley scores at the death in the corner and he's got to slot it to win it. So it's
under the sticks, mate. Imagine that. A score under the sticks, final play of the game, and it's like...
Pressure's on.
2 points, easy peasy, and you just bang it wide. Like, oh.
Would you go for the toe punt, Coley?
I wouldn't even use a tee. I just, you know, use the back of the heel, dig a divot out, stick the ball up, and then just toe poke it. Yeah.
The ASIC steel toe caps, mate. It'd go a mile, mate.
The old dusty air.
That's it, mate.
I like that rule, Chez. I like that rule.
I just think you'd see a few hookers doing it as well, do you know what I mean, Len? Everyone's on about, like, the mall's boring. well, if I could start scoring more tries and then I've got to convert the try, then it might be a bit more exciting. Do you know what I mean?
And also, you'd get the wingers and stuff. Normally, they just dive in the corner. It's like, I've scored, awesome. It's like, no, you're going to have to run to the sticks, mate. And it's going to make it a lot more challenging. Like, if they're converting their own try, they're not going to be leaping into the corner. They're going to be scooting under the sticks. Oh, I like this idea, Chez. I think we're onto it.
Chez, which position would you love to play for one game?
It's a tough question. It'd have to be fly off, wouldn't it? Like, something I'm never, ever going to be able to do, so I'd have to give it a crack. Or scrum off, Len. I'd have a go.
I think it's just bending over at your height, mate. Passing from the ruck, bending over, mate. Your back will blow out. But I'll back you at 10. And maybe go fullback. Show Freddie how
easy his job is.
Anyone tall can play fullback and claim the air.
Yeah, no, I might have to. He ain't got a chance in the line-out, may I add.
If you could go out for dinner with three players, who would it be?
I'm having Cowan Dickey there. He's coming with me. Who else would I take? That is a good question. We'll throw DuPont in there. He'll pay, which would be, yeah. Let's throw Dan Carter in there. Why not?
Sorry, you've got Carter, DuPont, and Cowan Dickey.
You panicked, haven't you? You panicked, mate. You panicked there, haven't you?
I think it's a good mix, mate. At the start, I was going for who's going to be good value. And then I've thought, actually, I'm just going to name some big names and bring them to dinner with me. But Dickie's there with me.
I'd pay good money to be a fly on the wall in that dinner.
There's never going to be an awkward silence at all because...
You'd learn nothing from DuPont or Carter, would you?
Dickie didn't stop talking, so I've covered all bases. I've covered the stories, I've covered the silence, and DuPont's covered the bill, so...
What's your French like, though, Chez?
My French is, worth for, mate. Don't know any French.
Because you speak good Spanish, mate. I thought you might have an Argentinian player with you.
I did do Spanish for A-level at school, if anyone's wondering.
Well, that's good, because obviously we're looking for a date for you, Chez. So, if Spanish is your first language, don't be put off, because Chez, that's no problem for you.
If that's the reach this pod has got, then I'm going to be seriously impressed, right?
So we have, this week, 7 downloads in Peru.
Just me in Peru.
We're 14 in Chile, 36 in Argentina, and 30 in Brazil, mate. So... Your date, you can lay the Spanish out thick, mate. There's big options now for you.
Hola, señoritas, as they say, mate.
Just to point out that, your 30 subscribers in Brazil aren't speaking Spanish.
Aren't speaking Spanish, yeah. That's them ruled out. But, we got a total of 57. Any chance of finding out what percentage of those downloads are female downloads? Or
don't be picky, mate. Don't be picky.
One might have a sister or, know a friend of a friend. And
is there a thing in Argentina where they have to touch their left testicle every time they see a redhead?
So I've just got to constantly go around holding my left nut.
No, they have to. When they see you, they touch the left nut. Yeah.
Really?
On that note, at Love of Rugby, get in socials, get in touch. If you are listeners in South America, to finish with, Chez, ultimate rugby fantasy.
I will say, if I could play for England with my brother one day, that'd be pretty special. Obviously, you've done that already, Len, so you know exactly what that feels like. But we've actually got to play together for Leicester yet before we can even start thinking about that. We've been at the same club for 3 years and still not played a game together, so who knows? But that would be my rugby fantasy.
Chez, thanks so much for joining us, mate. Been very insightful, very enjoyable.
No, thank you, Chez. Thank you, Ben. So, been awesome having you on, Chez. I hope you've enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for having me, fellas. It's my debut podcast appearance, so it's one to remember. So thank you very much for having me.
For the love of rugby.
A huge congratulations to Marley Packer on reaching 100 caps. Incredible achievement. Congratulations to Red Roses, who started their campaign with a great win against Italy.
Go find us on Instagram and TikTok. Search For the Love of Rugby.
If you are listening on Apple or Spotify, hit the follow button.
If you want another podcast to listen to, go and find Oceans, Life Underwater. It'll make you feel like you're at the bottom of the sea and make you love the world around you. Go and search for Oceans, Life Underwater.
If you want to listen to our podcast ad-free, go to Amazon Music. Or if you're on Apple, just subscribe for £1 a week. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.